Welcome to another episode of the On-Call Nightmares podcast. My name is Jay Gordon, and this time we are joined by Damian Shenkelman. So let's get started. So this time I get a chance to talk with Damian Shenkelman, and he was a really awesome talk. He works over at AltZero, helps make identity simple for developers. Before working over at AltZero, Damian was working at Microsoft on Azure, where I happen to work, so thank you very much for giving me some of your time. Of course, the On-Call Nightmares podcast continues as I interview different people from the world of technology about their experience being on-call. And of course, in order to keep this conversation going with all these different people, I need your help. So if you could, please send an email or a tweet or something my way expressing your interest. If you'd like to be a part of the On-Call Nightmares podcast, you can feel free to send me an email. That is oncallnightmares@gmail.com. You can also just send me a tweet. My DMs are open. It's either at oncallnightmare or at jdestro. So last time I was here, we had a really cool conversation with another CTO, but this time I want to get to someone that used to be an engineering manager, who's a director of engineering now, someone that still has the problem of building out a business and considering whether or not he needs to still be on the on-call rotation. And I think that that's a conversation that I've been really enjoying having with different people in managerial positions. Don't mind Rico, he's in the back snoring, I apologize, but he fell asleep on the couch as I was trying to sit down. For those of you who are interested in Rico, he is on my Twitter, a little bit too much, at jdestro. Anyway, let's get into the conversation with Damian, and hopefully you enjoy it. I really did. It's great to start meeting all these people, and like I said, I want you to be one of those people I meet, so let me know if you'd like to be on the podcast. So here's Damian. Welcome back to the On-Call Nightmares podcast. My name's Jay, and of course, we are back again with another interview with a technologist who spent time on call. And today, we're going to be speaking with Damian Shenkelman. And Damian, right now, is a director of engineering at AuthZero, and they help make identity services simple for developers. And before that, he spent many years working at Microsoft on Azure. Hey, I work at Microsoft. He's worked in media and patterns and practices related to initiatives. He spends his time with his family, friends, and exercising and catching up on things, MBA, which is cool. I'm more of an MLB person, but there's been a lot of hating on the Knicks recently, which is just nonstop. There was a really funny Kevin Garnett recruitment video that was passing around on the internet for New York City, which was essentially Pizza Rat and a few other things that I found ridiculous. So welcome, Damian.
Thank you. Great to be here, Jay. And hey, again, the MLB is not that big of a thing back where I'm from in Argentina, so the NBA is what I'm a fan of.
No problem. MLB is not quite as global, I think, as the NBA, but this is not a basketball or baseball podcast. Like, I could find a million other ways to do that. But what this podcast is about is, IT operations and being on call, whether you're coming into it as someone in engineering, someone in operations, or even someone in security development. So we've had a lot of different types of people. And I want to hear a little bit more about you. So, Damian, why don't you tell me how you got started on call in technology?
Yep, sure. Before AuthZero, I used to work at a company that did mostly consulting. So I didn't get that many opportunities to do that. And one of the things that brought me to the product world was getting that depth in many aspects and being particularly responsible for the services I built and kind of learning how they failed, iterating on them was something I was really looking forward to. So my first on-call experience was at AuthZero. It's a really interesting story because even in the early days, we didn't have an on-call rotation. This was like maybe we had like two, three people on the engineering team building systems. And I remember the first time like I went through my baptism of fire and did like push something to production that did not work. And that was kind of my first real on-call nightmare, I would say, because you get this feeling of, hey, like, there's this thing out there, but I'm not sure yet how to fix this. I'm fairly new at this. I got a lot of help from people on the team, but at the same time, like realizing that there were many things in which what I was doing could fail, could go wrong, made me feel a lot deeper of a feeling of responsibility for what I was building. And ever since then, I really got into like systems engineering, distributed systems, patterns, how things fail, and kind of trying to become an expert as much as I can in the technologies that we use and understanding how our systems work and how they didn't work.
Gotcha. Well, that's real cool. So, how long have you been involved in technology?
I've been involved in tech, like working ever since I was 17, so that'd be like almost 11 years now. I started really early working as I started college, which is not that uncommon back home, but that kind of gave me a lot of opportunities as I went through my career to kind of explore different things.
Cool. So you've mostly worked in systems, or were you in development? But where was your specialty when you kind of got started?
I would say my background is in engineering. So I've been kind of a software engineer, software developer for most of my life. And in the past 3, 4 years, really getting into depth with infrastructure matters, operations, reliability concerns. But my background, I would say, between like if you think of the typical software versus systems spectrum, was originally more towards the software spectrum.
Gotcha. Understand. Just want to kind of get an idea of where you came into it, because a lot of people will come into it and then end up in systems engineering, maybe coming from a systems administrator place. But there's more and more people, and I think it's got a lot to do with the advent of SRE, who've come from software engineering into or so just software development into roles where on-call is so important, and it's really interesting to see how that is moving the ideas, like more software developers building operations. It seems to have just had some more ideas thrown into the mix.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that starts if you think about like generally the DevOps movement and all of the practices and recommendations and like basically cultural things that happen there. And they're all around how the industry has shifted from, hey, I'm shipping a CD-ROM to now I'm shipping a system that needs to be, in a lot of cases, up 24/7, let's say, even though that's we know it's not possible, but and you have this people that need to understand how it works end to end, not just, okay, I just do the development part, because that's how you essentially can compete in this market. There are lots of things that before weren't even considered that are now common stream, and one of them is like reaching that divide between the I develop software and I operate it to make sure that everyone can do that, both things.
That's awesome. So let's get into, where the podcast normally goes into, which is we've heard a little bit about you and where you've come from, and now we want to hear a little bit of the nightmare, the dirt, the things that eventually we're going to actually learn something from. And in this particular situation, we'll go over the rules as always, and the rules are bendable. But I say the rules are bendable because we'll get to it. So don't incriminate others is the first rule. We are going to live by that DevOps thought that we are blameless. So that also means we're not going to incriminate others. And the third is help us learn. Now, Damien, you did disclose to me that you're going to blame yourself a little bit. And I think that I can let that slide, but as long as we're not pointing fingers at anyone else, let's hear it.
Yeah, so and this is related to kind of that first experience I mentioned during my intro. So I would say that my first nightmare was definitely that first time. So I remember we were closing the day, maybe like again 7 p.m. And I get a call from my boss at the time. He's the CTO, one of the founders at Obsidian. He's like, "Hey, this change went out, and like it seems it's failing. It's causing these issues." At that point, this was again very early in the Auth0 days. We didn't have like a predefined on-call rotation. We were doing lots of things. We had alerting, but it wasn't like, okay, this person's on call at this time. Which again, well, we learned through a couple of this that was very important to do. And I felt really bad. Not in a, like no one was saying, "Hey, this is something you did," but I was like, "Hey, I want to help my team. I really just joined. I really want to see this succeed. How can I help?" So I joined a bridge to try to say, "Hey, like this is what I was doing. This is where I remember we changed things today." And we had a couple of people that are kind of a couple of the gurus that built a lot of what Auth0 is today. And we kind of were able to revert the change and get things back to normal. So there were a couple of very interesting learnings, both like from my perspective, this was the aha moment, where it's like, okay, I broke this system for the first time. It wasn't that big of a deal at that point. Fortunately, we didn't have that many users. It has grown a lot ever since. But that's when I said, "Hey, I really need to learn about these things, not just about, hey, how do I not deploy changes that might break? That can happen to anyone. But okay, if that happens, how do we recover fast? How do we make sure that we can detect things fast enough? What are the failure modes for our database? Storage is something that typically fails. So how can we handle those better?" And I really kind of got into it and made it like I had some specific goals, not necessarily written down, but about like learning a lot of those things and kind of leading and teaching others about those matters. And at that point, as a company, we again started kind of instituting a rudimentary on-call rotation, having pager duty, making sure that, well, we were doing pull request review for all changes. So at that point, we did as a recommendation, not as a general rule. So we started enforcing some of that, what today would be kind of the basic foundation for a lot of our practices, where back in the day, maybe we didn't have those.
So was the failure based on just some sort of bug in code that was committed and then deployed?
Yes, in this case, yeah.
And that was a production level deployment, correct?
Yes, correct. So what happened was that the tests that we had at the time did not catch one particular flow where I think this was like a database query with one bad parameter and it failed in some cases. So we didn't have that coverage and then it ended up making that out to production.
Okay. So were there modifications to your testing policies around like what you test for, or was this something that it was just completely an oversight and it could have been like, what was done after to assure that if a similar incident couldn't occur again?
Yes, we did a bunch of things from an out, I would say both practices and also automation perspective to make sure that thing that happened and also similar things couldn't happen again. A big one, which was not related to this, but was making sure that as much as we could ensure that indexes existed in the database in the development environment whenever a query was executed, so you would avoid full collection scans. That was one of them. We also had a practice to say, "Hey, if we are testing anything against the database, let's ensure we include some integration tests, not just maybe unit tests, to make sure that what gets to the database is actually what the database understands getting there." Sometimes you might unintentionally make the error of having your mocks have incorrect logic that incorrectly mocks the database, and then that might be another source of issues.
Yeah, so and it sounds like you're using like something like Mongo, where if an incorrect insert into the JSON, even in the test, you know, something like that will really, really create some heck for you when you're trying to ensure there's those tests are working. And that's why going beyond just blanket tests and going into those individual unit tests ends up being really important.
Yes. The database in question of related to this incident was a Mongo database.
Yeah, that's I heard collection scan, and to be honest with you, if you have a database that's got like, you know, 2 million documents and it doesn't have the right index, it could take a little bit of while to do that, especially if you're using like, you know, so hardware. And it sounds like that might have been the case during the test. It slows down the whole process and the CI/CD, and so maybe that's one of the things you just look for, I'm guessing, is what you're saying.
Yes. For example, one of the things that you can do is you can say, hey, when I'm running my tests, if I'm running them on the development or the test environment, make sure that any test that runs a query that results in a full table scan fails.
Yes.
And you would not do that in a system like production, where, hey, if there's a full table scan, you might want to get an alert because it's definitely something you want to take a look at, but not something that you want to see fail because, well, they are different environments. So we did the former there where we checked these things in our dev and test environments, but we kept production as well, and then we introduced those practices around like the integration tests with Mongo.
Sure. So you've been on call. And you've now established, I guess, a rotation on the team, correct?
Yes.
So if you don't mind, how big is your rotation now based on, and do you think about the amount of customers compared to how many people you have on call? Like, do you have a ratio or some sort of system that you use to know how many people you should have on call at a single time?
So we don't have a ratio necessarily. We have a couple of rules of thumbs that we strive towards. So one of them is ideally have a rotation of at least 6 people, assuming primary, secondary rotation. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a key thing to ensure that people get to be on call with a frequency that's not hopefully demanding too much of their own time. You also aim to have the lowest amount of alerts possible, so that's even if they are on call, it's not disruptive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, one of the things we always take a look at is whether we can share rotations between a couple of teams. So assuming that teams have reached, quote, maturity level, around their on-call practices, their playbooks, their services, and how reliable they are in a predictable way, you can say, hey, let's make sure that these two teams can collaborate on a single rotation. You essentially build that rotation up, and you also get some of the knowledge sharing. Now, there's potentially kind of a downside to that. If you make that rotation too big, people just don't get to be on call that often, and in general that's a good thing for work-life balance. But if you consider the fact that on call is just another thing that you need to practice, you want to make sure that, hey, this, you aren't just on call twice a year because you might be rusty in case something happens, right?
Sure. So it's keeping the muscle memory a part of the process. I get that. It makes a lot of sense. So the other thing that I've been talking to people who are, giving advice on it, on how engineering managers work, and I've been meaning to talk to them about this particular question, is at what point do you see yourself no longer on call and giving it over to your rotation if you are on call now? Like, do you feel like you can delegate enough to a point where you can feel like, as the director of the team, I can let go a little?
Yes, definitely. And that's a good question. And it's something I usually talk about with both teams and also managers that are either coming into Otsido or just at Otsido or maybe changing teams. I would say that it depends. That's a fairly common software answer. But there are different stages, right? So the reality is that being part of the on-call rotation both helps your relationship with your team because they know you're feeling the same things they are. So in a lot of cases, how you make decisions around potentially priorities and do we focus on improving some qualities of the software and making it more reliable or maybe investing on better self-healing mechanisms over working on new product improvements, you kind of don't have that bias of, okay, I don't have to be on call. And at the same time, it improves your understanding of the system, which makes you be able to make hopefully better decisions, have better conversations with people on your team.
Gotcha. Now,
that's kind of the context that we typically provide, and different people are in different situations. So maybe if a manager is relatively new to the company or to a particular team, or if the team's relatively small, it's always a very good thing that they are part of that rotation. If maybe the team starts to get larger, it might not be the best thing because it might disrupt other activities. So it might even be a seasonal thing where ideally you strive to do that. But maybe if you are going through a hiring sprint and hiring takes a lot of time, you might take 1 or 2 weeks off that rotation if you're a manager.
But your goal is to eventually no longer be part of the rotation. Would you say that? Because that's the one thing that I'm curious is that is there a need to stay engaged because of, you know, I guess the need to keep the fingers warm, if you will, you know, or is it okay to kind of say, you know what, I've built a system that I can let work for itself. What's your take?
Okay. So I think there are a couple of things there. Like from my perspective, I think I will always be on call, although not necessarily probably primary for the team. So at this point, I'm secondary for a couple of teams that are still, I'm switching over to another manager because we just did a reorg, that's one. But at the same time, I'm like maybe the first executive escalation. And that's very useful, both either as a potential incident commander, if there's a relatively large incident or something that spans a lot of teams, that's something that I'm definitely a part of. And it's, as you said, it's useful to kind of be aware of the state of the system so you can make informed decisions. But from the other side, I would say that's the goal. It's that you don't have to be the person that's always there or that needs to be there just as much as anyone else. And it's similar to being on vacation. You don't want the system to depend on you being there. Mm-hmm. You are there, it's good, as we said. So if you are a manager, you can't be part of the rotation. But not being part of that rotation should just make everything should just work as well if you're not.
That's a great answer. Thank you. So we're going to kind of roll it down, bring us to the next part of the podcast where we start rolling it on home. We land the plane, if you will. And I want to ask you, you know, as a person that's on call right now and who's managing people, it sounds like, give me first a piece of advice. What do you give to the person who's the on-call engineer or any type of on-call person that's in it? What piece of advice could you give to someone that's on call right now?
Okay. Let's see. So it's hard. I think it's very natural for a lot of people to get nervous. You're in the situation where you might get paged. Sometimes you know what's going on, sometimes you don't. You're part of a team. You want to make sure that maybe if you're getting paged at 3 a.m., you don't have to wake other people up. But I think the main things we tell people here, and I think that's really general, is when you get paged, it's not something that's about you. It's about, hey, we are having this problem as a team. So if you need to escalate because you're not sure about something, make sure that you do. Make sure that you take care of yourself after an on-call rotation. So maybe take a day off or take an afternoon off, whatever works, especially if you had a very bad shift. Learn from it. I think that's very important. At Dotzito, we're doing a thing we call reliability reviews, which is basically the two people that are kind of handing off the on-call get together and say, hey, these are the alerts we had last week. These are the ones that maybe should have been a higher priority. These are the ones that should have been a lower priority, so no page.
So you're doing retrospectives on what happened. Cool.
Yes, exactly. It would be a retrospective or maybe an iteration review around specifically the on-call or the operational aspects. Gotcha. And the last one I would say, and this is something I try to do a lot, especially if I'm coming into an incident now, try to get people to relax and ideally even have fun. And I'm not saying, hey, everything's broken, let's laugh about it because it's a good thing. It's we're trying to solve the problem. A lot of people in the industry like solving complex problems. There's some pressure. Let's try to kind of take some of that off. Maybe a couple of jokes. Let's make sure that everyone understands what the role is, make sure that if it's a longer incident, people are taking breaks. So all of those things kind of to blow off some steam during that pressure period, I think are very useful, and I would highly recommend those.
Cool. So who's going to win in the NBA this year? Who do you think is looking good?
That's a very good question. I think it's going to be the Warriors.
Yeah, they're always tough.
Yeah, it's usually an easy choice. My me and my friends, I have a lot of friends that used to play the game together, and we always talk about these things. And the last few years, it's gotten a bit boring when you can predict who's going to win fairly consistently at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, the NFL is a little bit like that lately, where you just know at some point you're going to be watching the Patriots sometime at the end of the early portion of your year. But like I said, this is not a sports show. But anyway, I really want to thank you, Damian, for being part of the podcast today. Let's make sure that we get anything out. You are on Twitter as D Schenkelman. It is D S-C-H-E-N-K-E-L-M-A-N. You'll be able to find that, of course, on the podcast description and information. And of course, you're over at Auth0, that's helping people make identity simple for developers. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of share before we say goodbye?
No, I think, again, it's always great to share some of these stories, especially for people that I think might be getting into this to know, hey, this is what it looks like. It usually gets better over time as you kind of have some experience over the first few weeks of doing it. But I really like both like what you're doing with the show in terms of trying to share that with people in the community and making this a more day-to-day thing instead of a taboo topic.
Yeah, I don't think that on-call should be taboo, and I don't think people should also think that it's terrible. I think on-call should be understood as not something that should even be like an on-call or a negative. And I think that the reason why I called the show On-Call Nightmares is that what I'm trying to do is not make it seem like it's always a nightmare. Like, these are the hard parts that people go through in order to get to the good thing that, you know, eventually a company can be, or an open source project, or whatever it is. It's all about iteration. And sometimes there's a nightmare as part of that iteration.
Yeah, definitely. And I can attest to that.
Yeah, we've had some nasty bugs deployed in our life, those of us who've deployed code before. So, you know, it's all about learning and iterating and writing something new and seeing where it goes from there.
Yes, and again, having been here at Auth0 from the early days, I would say definitely that the key word is iterating. It's you, if you get it right the first time, you're probably not taking enough risk, especially if you're again, starting something new, trying to get something out there. And that might mean that because you're taking a bit more risk, sometimes things break and you have to fix them. And that's fine. But the important thing is like the learning, the iteration, how you get better for next time.
Mm-hmm. Process. Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Damian. We'll be right back with the end of the podcast. You've been listening to On Call Nightmares with Damian Schenkelman. Thank you very much, Damian.
Thanks, Jake. Pleasure to be here.
We'll be right back. Thanks again, Damian. That was great. I really appreciated your time. And for you, the listener, as always, I really do appreciate your time. So next time, let's keep talking. I'd like you to be on the podcast. So at Jay Destro on Twitter, at On Call Nightmare on Twitter, or you can find me oncallnightmares@gmail.com. Let me know you want to be a part, because I want you part of this. So we'll see you next time. Thanks again for listening.